Hi everyone, this is Nina Amir, the Inspiration to Creation Coach and the author of How to Blog a Book and the Author Training Manual, both Amazon best-selling books. And I'm here today talking about publishing, actually talking about many different publishing options you have, and one particular option. And I'm here with Terry Whalen, who is the acquisitions editor at Morgan James. So welcome, Terry.
Nina, great to be with you today.
It wasn't that long ago we saw each other, right, in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, not too long ago.
So let me tell everyone a little bit about Terry. I'm going to give you some background on Terry so you know who he is and what he's done, because it's actually pretty amazing. I learned some things about Terry when I read his bio that I didn't know, such as how many books you've written, Terry. Pretty impressive.
So, it's amazing, yeah.
So Terry Whalen understands both sides of the editorial desk as an editor and a writer. He's worked as a magazine editor, and his magazine work has appeared in more than 50 publications. A former literary agent, Terry is an acquisitions editor now at Morgan James Publishing. He's written more than 60 books through traditional publishers in a wide range of topics, from children's books to biographies to co-authored books. Several of Terry's books have sold over 100,000 copies, which is very impressive. Terry's newest book, Jumpstart Your Publishing Dreams, Insider Secrets to Skyrocket Your Success, is packed with insights. Also, Terry has an innovative online training course to help authors effectively connect with literary agents and editors called Write a Book Proposal, which we will talk about a little later. And Terry is a popular speaker and teacher at numerous writers' conferences and an active member of the American Society of Journalists and Authors. So Terry and I did just see each other, I think it was maybe just about 2 weeks ago at the San Francisco Writers Conference. And what I didn't know about you was that you, like me, started in magazine journalism, because that's my degree is actually in magazine journalism.
Yeah, I thought that's what I was going to do. I lived and breathed newspaper journalism, but walked away from it really for about 10 years. I was in linguistics actually, and wandered back to it and started query letters and for magazines. And that's really where I got started doing that.
Interesting. So I switched over because I started freelancing. I worked for a bunch of regional publications and then I freelanced and then was asked to edit a book. And that's how I got started.
Wow.
So, okay, so there are lots of different ways to publish today, traditionally, hybrid, indie, and there are many different types of publishers in addition, small, medium, large, and independent. Do you think that you could give us a little bit of an overview, especially since you're working for what is called an independent publisher? So can you give our viewers today a little bit of an overview of sort of the different types of publishers that are out there?
Yeah, Nina, that's a really great question. Like, there are traditional publishers that most of us think of, the big five, I'd say Simon Schuster, Random House, Hachette, that where you go through an agent, you get an agent, you get your material with the agent. The agent gets a proposal from you, shops that proposal around, gets you a book deal. So that's a very common way, and the way that I've been doing it for many years. That's one option for people, but it's very hard to go through all those sieves that they have to get your book out there into that traditional market. So one of the popular ways that people are doing things these days is through self-publishing. And that's kind of at the other end of the spectrum, I would say, where you have complete control over your content, what your cover is going to be, what the interior is. What people don't realize about self-publishing, I think, is the real challenge that they have to reach their target market. I have a lot of people don't realize that CreateSpace does over 50,000 titles a year. And the same thing with the author solutions companies. They appear in about 20 different brands out there. They make great money for the publisher, is what I'd say about them. For the author, not so much. I've met a number of authors that have spent $20,000 or more with the author solutions companies. Now they appear like a lot of different names. There's Westbow, there's iUniverse, Author House, Ex Libris, Trafford, a number of different names that they appear under, but they're all produced by these people that are in the Philippines, and they do about 50,000 titles a year as well. So that's not a way that I recommend the people go, but they can certainly go that way, and their calling team is very persistent with people, I guess I would say, to make you realize that you can get published with them. So, you know, it's kind of those two spectrums, and I guess in the middle is the company that I work for, Morgan James Publishing. We call ourselves more of a hybrid because we're not truly, truly traditional in the way we operate, and we're not truly self-publishing either. We receive like 5,000 submissions a year, but only do about 150 books. So there is a vetting process that's very important, I know, to traditional publishing. But yet, we publish a lot of books. We're doing around 150 books a year, which is a lot. We're considered a medium-sized traditional New York publishing house by the New York community, and our books have been on the New York Times list over 20 different times.
That's pretty amazing. And I know you told me that you've seen some books in the stores at the airports as well. And so you have good distribution, which is important.
It is. It is. And I think that's one of the keys to anybody that wants to figure out how they're going to get published is how to get your book out there in the broadest possible way. Our books at Morgan James are distributed through Ingram Publishing Services. Now, people hear that and they go, oh, Ingram, I know them. Yeah, I can walk in off the street and work with them. No, you can't. we were actually one of the beta publishers with Ingram Publishing Services, which is a paid specialized part of Ingram. And what it means on a practical basis is we have 40 commissioned sales reps that travel the country, sell the book into Barnes & Noble's, Books A Million, Chapters Indigo in Canada. We're on the phone with these sales reps every single week talking to them about what authors are doing to promote their book, because every bookstore in the country buys books based on their perception of what the author is going to be doing to promote the book. So we want our authors to be reporting to us on a regular basis their activity. We in turn tell that to the sales guys. They in turn tell it to the bookstores, and that's what keeps your book out there in the stores and keeps it selling and not getting returned. Now, I hope the people that are watching this understand that all the books that are in the bookstore are there basically on consignment. If they don't sell, that retailer has the right to return that book to the publisher for a full refund. That's a holdover from, you know, the Great Depression that's still with us today. Publishers don't like it. Retailers like it because they don't have to take risk on books. But it's one of those realities that still carries on today.
Right. So for some of the people who are watching this, they may not have any idea what a hybrid publisher is. I mean, there are hybrid authors. So for instance, I'm a hybrid author. I self-publish as well as traditionally publish. But, they think, okay, so there's self-publishing where I'm going to pay for it all. And I'm going to, you know, basically I'm going to invest in myself and I'm going to invest in my book and I'm going to start a self-publishing company. If I don't go with Trafford or one of these others that you talked about, you know, if I don't go with an author services company, then I'm doing a startup publishing company and I become a publisher as well as an author. And then on the other side of the spectrum, as you said, there's the big New York publishing houses that are the what we think of as the traditional publishing houses, where they're giving me an advance and I write the book and they kind of do the rest, except for promoting, which we know everybody has to promote these days. But so what makes a hybrid publisher and what is the Morgan James model?
Yeah, that's a good question. If you manage to get a contract these days from a Simon & Schuster, they take world rights is one of the things that happens on books. And so if you want to do anything creative with your material, if you want to serialize it in magazines, if you want to give it away on your website, You have to go back to them and ask for permission because they control everything on your content. These days, the Simon Schuster contract, as I understand it, is running about 70 pages. And it basically scares the daylights out of you when you get one of these things because it's like, oh my goodness, look at all the stuff that they take when you read through
right.
it. Morgan James is very different. Our contract's only 4 pages, and we allow the writer to keep all their intellectual property. The writer grants us the right to sell it in the bookstore. That's all we really care about, selling it in either the brick and mortar bookstores or the online bookstores out there, which means that the author can do anything creative with their material because it's still their intellectual property at the end of the day. I think that's one of the real distinctions for the way we operate out there. Also, we're not a self-publisher, so nobody can just walk in off the street and say, okay, here's my money, publish this. So we do have that publication board that vets books and sees if it's an appropriate book for Morgan James or not. An example I give you of that is about 30% of our books at Morgan James are Christian, and we sell those books into the Christian bookstores, the brick and mortar bookstores, as well as online. So you can imagine for our fiction, we're not going to want to publish real sexual content that have F-bombs in them or things like that. So that's part of our stance as a publishing house. David Hancock named the Morgan James after his 2 kids, and so he would like to have published material that he feels completely comfortable the kids picking the book off the shelf and saying, oh, what's this, and reading it and being okay with it. So that's a distinction that Morgan James has. And then once an author signs with us and we're ready to create their book, another interesting thing that Morgan James does is for every book that goes through our system, we form what we call an entrepreneurial vision mastermind group. Now, it's kind of a fancy term, Nina, but basically it's a telephone conference call. The author can bring whoever they want to the call. It could be an agent. It could be a marketing person, a friend. It's just them. On our side, we would have a managing editor, a marketing director, a branding expert, David Hancock, the founder of our company, be on those calls. And together, the group figures out what's the best title. What's the best subtitle? What does the cover look like? What size is the book going to be? What's it going to cost? When's the book going to release in the bookstore? All those kinds of decisions we make together. Now, I said that real logically, like every publisher should do that, but I know they don't. I've been an acquisitions editor at 2 other publishers besides Morgan James, and I would show authors their cover and their title, but I really wouldn't care what they told me because the publisher usually controls all that stuff, right or wrong. My experience has been, over the years, I've interviewed more than 150 best-selling authors, and often when I talk to these authors, they'll tell me, well, Terry, that's not my title, and I hate my cover. And so that really doesn't help us sell books today if you feel like that. So we want the author included on board, understanding how all the details of their book came together and excited about it. I mean, about 10 years ago, I did a book for a New York publishing house. They paid me a very large advance. It was when Promise Keepers was one of the fastest growing men's movement in America. We got a 6-figure advance for this book. They never showed Bishop Philip Porter, who I was writing the book for, the cover of the book. Now, they had his picture on the cover of the book with his hand raised like this. He hated that cover. He wouldn't dare walk out in a stadium full of 100,000 men to show them that book cover. They didn't include him in the process. So what happened? They took the book out of print after 6 months. It's gone.
Really? Wow.
And so it's a really sad story because I poured a lot of work and writing energy into that book that's no longer out there. I have a few of my I'm probably the only person in the country that has any copies of that book. So, you know, a lot of crazy things can happen over on the traditional side just because they don't include people. But we do. And from my experience in publishing, a lot of what is good about publishing is that it's really a consensus building process. So I've seen some authors come to us with their self-published covers that are awful, and we gently explain to them that they don't look very good. And we also run it up the flagpole, show it to our sales guys, and they come back and say, oh, no, we don't want to sell that. And that's the kind of information that we feed back to them so that if they really want to be successful, let's all work together and develop something that's really great out of your book. And so and also in this mastermind process that we do, that's free. It's for the lifetime of our relationship, because in these calls, we're all about helping our authors know what they could, should be doing, hold them as accountable as they'll let us. I tell every author, Nina, I don't care who publishes your book, I'd say 80% of the responsibility falls on the author to sell books. And at Morgan James, we publish about 40 of the guerrilla marketing titles that have sold 21 million copies out there. Now, if you've never seen a guerrilla marketing book, it's all about using your mind and your imagination instead of your pocketbook is what it's all about. So it doesn't have to cost you a lot of money to promote, but you do have to be doing it on a consistent basis. And these mastermind calls, we're in it for the long haul. We're still coaching authors that came to us in 2005. Our publisher at Morgan James, who you know is Rick Frischman. Now, Rick, 37 years ago, started one of the biggest public relations firms in the Plan Television Arts. So he's worked with, you name the best-selling author out there, but, you know, Jack Canfield, Mark Victor Hansen, Harvey McKay, Stephen King, Mitch Albom. Rick has worked with all these people. And so he got out of what he was doing about 8 years ago, became our publisher at Morgan James. He's often on these free mastermind calls. So you can imagine, you get a guy like Rick, you know, focused on your book and how to get more press, more publicity for your book. His advice is pretty incredible for our authors. So as an acquisitions editor here, they basically tell me I'm looking for three things. I'm looking for coachable authors that are willing to participate in the mastermind process. I talk to authors all day long, Nina, and sometimes I'll talk to an author and they'll say, well, I want the publisher to do everything for me. I don't want to do any marketing. And I'm like, well, okay, whatever that publisher is, I hope you can find them out there.
Right.
But, you know, but they're not a good fit for Morgan James at the end of the day. So we look, that's one of the big things. David Hancock always tells me it's about 80% the author. So, you know, that appearance and that conversation I have with the author is very important for how they're going to come across, and are they going to get out there and talk about their book with people? That's one of my criteria. The second thing that we look for at Morgan James is we look for complete, fully edited manuscripts. You know, to be honest, from my experience in publishing, less and less editing is being done inside the publishing house these days. There's some great freelance editors that can really whip your manuscript into the best shape possible. You control your content under our system. So if I manage to get you a book contract from Morgan James, that we'll publish your book, whatever you turn in. Now, we're going to go through it to make sure we don't publish something that embarrasses us or makes us look stupid. But I think it's a good deal in a sense that you control your content. So that's, you can see we're kind of a mixture between traditional and between self-publishing. We pay traditional royalties. We pay our royalties monthly. They do escalate. 10 years ago, I was an acquisitions editor at another publishing house, and I was offering authors 10% of the net profits. Morgan James, we start out at 20. It does escalate. As the more books you sell, the higher your royalty will be. We also produce the book in all electronic formats, not just Kindle. Kindle, iPhone, iPad, Nook, Kobo, all those different devices. And we do an aggressive 50-50 split on those electronic royalties. About 30% of our authors at Morgan James have agents, so it's very common that I'm speaking with agents in New York or LA or wherever they are. Agents are always impressed that we give that high on the electronic royalties. Matter of fact, one of my agent friends who used to work at Random House said that our 50% is double any contract that she's ever seen. So very generous on that side. We also make an audio of every book. The author can either record it or we'd hire the talent at our expense and do a 50-50 split on the audio royalties as well. We pay our royalties monthly is another distinguishing thing. You have to kind of fit into whatever accounting system the publisher has. Some publishers pay once a month. Some publishers pay once a year. Some publishers pay quarterly, but we pay monthly on the royalties. We also pay a small advance at Morgan James. According to Publishers Weekly, advances are averaging $500. Now, with all the large advances and small advances, they average $500. Now, we're under market at Morgan James, and that we pay $100 for an advance, and it's mostly so the author can honestly answer the very important publishing question, did you get an advance? They can say yes. And then somebody says, oh, what kind of advance did you get? Say, oh, I can't tell you. That's all confidential. So we pay advances. And, we treat them all, treat all of our authors the same in that respect, whether they're going to be a New York Times bestseller or whether they're a brand new author. We look for three things. We look for coachability. We look for complete, fully edited manuscripts. Now, you don't have to have that edited manuscript when you come in the door, but you have to realize that you're going to be turning that in. The third element that's in our contract is a little unusual. Morgan James is known as the entrepreneurial publisher. And so we're going to invent, we're not a self-publisher. So, all the books we sell in the bookstore, those are all on us. We're going to print those, pay you a royalty on those books. So it's very common that we have $10,000, $15,000, invested in your book, just getting it out there into the marketplace. For our New York Times bestsellers, we have as much as $270,000 invested in those books before we get them out into the marketplace. So in our contract, we ask every author to commit to buying 2,500 copies of their own book. Now, when I came to Morgan James a few years ago, Nina, I asked them where they came up with this number, and they said that our typical author, because of this free coaching and training I was telling you about, is selling 2,500 copies of their own book in the first year to 18 months that their book's in print. But there's no time element in the contract. So you literally have years to buy these books. Now, you get the books from us at our exact print plus $2. So as an upfront investment, when they sign one of our contracts, we ask the author to give us that $2 over the print price of the book. So it's $2 times 2,500 books, $5,000. And then what do we mean by print costs? I know from being in publishing a long time, you can fudge around on that. We don't. Our contract clearly says, let's say your book is a 200-page paperback in the standard size. You buy that book in quantities from us, then you're going to get that book for $1.59 each. It's very common to sell a 200-page paperback book for $20, $19.95. So if you do that for 2,500 books, that's $50,000 of gross income there. So these are your books. So you can give them away. You can sell them on your website. Sell them when you keep all the money from that. We sell the books in the bookstore. We pay you a monthly royalty on that. Now, we can produce your book very quickly at Morgan James, usually about 8 to 10 weeks after we get that edited manuscript. Getting it in the bookstore, that's something we talk about, but typically we're about 6 months out on getting your book sold into the bookstore, which is quicker than a lot of publishers. I've worked with publishers that are 18 to 24 months out on getting your book sold in the bookstore. Our publication board at Morgan James meets every week, which is a good thing. I worked at two other houses, Nina, and they only met once a month, and they never met in the summertime because of vacations or whatever, and they never meet around the holidays. So they make a lot slower decisions than our group does, but I'm sending contracts to authors every week. It's a lot of fun, and we're making some great books. We do have a private Facebook group for our authors. They're all in with each other, going to each other's events. We're one of eight publishers in the country. We have our own speakers bureau. The whole idea is to get our authors paid speaking engagements to sell books in the back of the room. David Hancock, the founder of Morgan James, says, have any prospective author call anybody in our catalog and ask them about their Morgan James experience. Now, to me, that says that we have a different kind of author out there. Talking to different kinds of authors, believe me, you don't want to call their authors a lot of times. Right. You're going to hear all these horror stories about how they've got all these books in their garage and they're trying to figure out how to sell them and all that kind of thing. We don't. You know, we have authors that are very enthused about their book. They were involved in the process. They understand how their book came together. They're excited about it. They want to tell people about it. And we have some negative complaints out there. You know, if you look online, every publisher has people that don't like them and complain about them, because you can say anything about anybody you want to on the internet and nobody can do anything about it. So, but the stuff about Morgan James that I've looked at is all from, you know, 2008, 2009. And we have very excited authors, because they're included in the process of how their book came together.
Right. So, I know that there's some aspects of your model that are very different in terms of like the masterminding and all that. Do you have any way to compare the model, the Morgan James model, to any other hybrid authors or hybrid publishing companies, or is, you know?
Well, there are some, I've seen some contracts, from, like, John Wiley, for example, and where you have to buy some significant numbers of your books, but it's a whole lot more, more dollar investment per se. And, I was amazed when I saw that. I haven't looked at those numbers in a while, but I do have a John Wiley contract that I've actually seen that information. Most of these contracts are confidential, so it's really hard to gather this information about other companies. But that principally is the objection that a lot of people, if people are going to object about Morgan James, they're going to object about the $5,000 deposit and about the fact that they have to buy these books over the lifetime of their relationship. What my perspective is on that particular issue is that I've signed 60 book contracts with traditional publishers. Normally, I get to buy my own books at 40 or 50% off right. The retail price that the publisher sets.
Exactly.
So that being $7 or $8 or $9 at the end of the day, it's a whole lot more money than what we're talking about. And what I figured out, I've been with Morgan James almost 3 years now, Nina, and what I figured out is if somebody comes to us and they don't have the $5,000 for whatever reason, there's crowdfunding ways. I have had some authors that have been successful at raising that money. But if they don't have the money, what it shows me is that they're not a good fit for Morgan James, because they're probably not going to spend any money on their book to promote it. Then I'm probably going to buy postcards and send out about their book,
right?
Because that's just where they are, and that means they're not the right kind of author for us.
Right. And that's a good point. I mean, and so just for our listeners, so they know, there are other models out there for hybrid publishers. That most of them are in some way similar, I would say, to Morgan James, in terms of you're either paying something up front and then getting bigger royalties back, or you're not paying anything, but, you know, you're getting money faster, or there's always something in there that's somewhat similar. So what would you say are the biggest benefits to going with this kind of a model for the author?
Well, I think one of the biggest benefits is that the team approach, I think, to have that helping hand out there, really, to know how to get you from one place to another. Like some of our authors, for example, they want to get on the New York Times list. Well, that's cool. We've done that over 20 times, and so we know how to guide authors to be able to do that. You've got to have a different kind of campaign with that than a first-time author that just wants to get out there and sell a few books or sell in the bookstore. That's a different kind of thing, and so we gear the mastermind process to where the author is on their journey is what I'd say. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Of course, some authors listen to us better than others. I did a book about a year and a half ago called The Garbage Man's Guide to Life, 8 Ways to Get Out of the Dumps. Now, it's a beautiful book. These guys came out of the waste management business. Norm LeMay sold his waste management company for like $350 million. So they hired a publicist, and they had all these great plans for how they were going to get out there and sell books. David Hancock came to me a few months ago and said, "Terry, I'm not hearing anything from these authors. Their sales aren't showing anything. Reach out to them and see what you can do." So I called the author. He was discouraged. He's like, "Terry, I spent 3 years of my life on this book. Nothing's happening. We had to fire a publicist in March. We'd spent $58,000 with this publicist." And I thought, "Steven, you know, have another mastermind call. They're free. You know, don't spend any more money on your book. You know, get the team together and see what you can do." And so he's done that now. They chastised him a little bit for hiring a publicist that we never heard of, which is kind of a red flag, you know, when you do that, because we're in the book business. We know who's really successful at promoting books and who's not. And they hired somebody we'd never heard of. So, you know, there's all kinds of risk in this business, but I think that kind of advantage of having having somebody to turn to that can really help you be able to get your book out there in the best possible way is an advantage. And I have authors that ask me, "Was my book in the bookstore?" And I say, "I don't know. I'll look. I'll find out." And sure enough, I find out that their book has been in the bookstore, but the bookstores are starting to return it because this particular author was promoting her book, but she wasn't telling us what she was doing on a regular basis. So the communication channel kind of broke down there. And so we had no information to feed to our sales guys to say, "This author is active. Don't return their books." And so we really do try to train our authors how to help themselves through that process. It's right. Not perfect, but we're certainly making some great books, and the authors are very excited about them.
And what kind of books are you looking for? What kind of books does Morgan James publish?
We publish all different kinds of stuff. We do how to, self-help. We do business books. We do memoirs. I do a few children's books. We do some fiction. We did have a whole fiction division, but they were actually so successful that about a year and a half ago, they broke off and formed their own company. We were doing 40 or 50 novels. We're still doing some novels, but, you know, they have to be clean novels and under 100,000 words. But I'm actively looking for all kinds of stuff that that we publish. It's fun.
Great. And so what do writers need to consider as they think about what type of publishing track would be best for them and their book? So, you know, we've talked about traditional publishing and self-publishing and hybrid publishing. And, of course, there are big, small, medium publishers. So what should they be thinking about as they decide what's the best track for them?
Well, I think they have to decide is where, how they want to make their books, and do they want to have control over their process, or do they want the publisher just to do it for them? Do they want their books to appear in brick and mortar bookstores? Is that important to them? Because that's something that we do at Morgan James, but normally, if you self-publish, it's very hard to get your book into those brick and mortar bookstores. So, you just have to figure out whether you want to go through the process of creating a proposal with your book. I always recommend authors do that, whether no matter how they publish, whether self-published or whether traditionally published, because that book proposal has so much information that's not in their manuscript about them. One of the elements in a book proposal is you have to give some comparative titles out there. And that information, we use it with our salespeople, but it's good for the author to know where they fit into the market. Who is their target market? All those kinds of questions that a lot of authors never even think to ask, unfortunately.
Right. Well, I mean, that was the whole, maybe not the whole premise, but the premise behind the author training manual, my book. It came out this year because it uses the book proposal as the basic business plan for a book, which it is. But I tell self-published authors and novelists to use it not just because they want to submit to a publisher, but as a way to evaluate their idea for marketability. Because when you start studying the market, and when you start studying the competition, you can actually take that information to craft a more marketable idea, to craft a better book.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so that's the idea there. I think that everyone needs to go through what I used to call the proposal process. Now I call it the author training process, because I think that when you go through the whole book proposal or the whole business plan, you actually can not only end up knowing you know, where your book should be on the bookstore shelf, and you know, whether you've crafted a marketable idea and who your market is, who your readers are, and what your content will be, but you also know who you are, and you know whether, you know, you have a platform, you know whether you have any idea how to promote your book, all those kinds of things, right? And so
it's all very important part of the process. And I see authors all the time that have decided to self-publish for whatever reason. I was Skyping with an author the other day that's got a memoir, and you know, it's the words, so that if we were going to publish the book, it would be close to 700 pages. We're not going to publish a book like that, you know? So if they want to not break that book into several books, which I gave them that alternative, they're not a good fit for us, because we're not going to publish a 700-page book out there. It's just not, it's not going to sell. It's going to have all kinds of production problems, and we're going to put out something that's not going to work.
Right. So you've been an acquisitions editor at more than one publishing company. So I think you're a good person to talk about what you look for in a proposal, not just at Morgan James, but anywhere. So let's start with the query letter, because you get some unagented work, right?
I do. About 70% of our work is unagented.
Okay. Yeah. So it comes in, it's not represented by an agent. Or even if it was represented by an agent, you'd probably still get a query letter first, right?
Often, or I might just get the proposal. Sometimes people, we're not real, even though I've written books about proposal creation and all that kind of thing. We're not real formal at Morgan James. So we work with people, whatever they have.
Okay. Well, let's just say you get a query.
Okay.
What is it in a query that, that you look for, or that would make it stand out?
Well, one of the things that makes it stand out is the writing process. Now, people say, "Well, how do you judge that?" It is a little, it is subjective, admittedly, but I've read thousands of these things. So a while back, I interviewed an acquisitions editor at a major publishing house, and I asked him how they knew if they had a good one. And I think that answer he gave is probably my answer too. You read the first line, and if it's a good line, you read the next line. If it's a good paragraph, you read the next paragraph. And that's pretty much how it works, so that you don't want to bury your most exciting information over on page 15, because that editor may never get there. So you want to start with a bang. You want to show why you, of all the people in the world, should write this book, and capture our attention right away.
Right. And so what about with a proposal? Because a proposal is a longer document, lots of different sections. So what are you looking for there?
At the proposal stage, I generally do what I went to pub board meetings at my previous publishers, and I would see the marketing people, the salespeople typically do this, is they take that proposal document, they flip to the back to the sample chapters, and they read that and see if that interests them. And then if it does, then they flip to the front and see who in the world this person is and why they should publish that person's book. So I think, again, you know, it boils down to having really interesting information in your proposal. Do you have an audience? Are you developing the audience? People are amazed, for example, you know this about me, that I have 139,000 followers on Twitter. Well, I didn't do that overnight. I've been working at that for years. I'm still growing my Twitter following out there. But if you have something like that, then tell me about it so that I don't have to dig it up out there, but I just find it in black and white in your proposal.
Okay. So that brings me to a certain point about the proposal and about what they're putting in there. I think that the majority of authors, especially aspiring authors who haven't been published before, they think that they're going to submit a proposal and that that it's all about just the craft, you know, that they have to have a good idea and be good writers, and that's it. My premise is that actually publishers and acquisitions editors are looking for good partners, good business partners. They want someone who can produce that product, right? Who can write that book and give them something to sell, but they need a good business partner. So can you speak to that?
Yeah, it's really true. If the writing is terrible, we can fix the writing. There are editors out there that can transform your work into something that's highly readable. So we can fix all that. What we can't fix is some author that doesn't care anything about promotion, doesn't care anything about how to get their book in the marketplace, and doesn't want to learn that. Now, there's not part of the complication of publishing, and you know this, Nina, as well as anybody, is there's not just one path. That's kind of what we're talking about here, about how to be successful. If we knew what the path to bestseller status is, then we'd all do that, and every book would be a bestseller, but it's not. And so one book does these things, it works great, they sell tons of copies, and then we say, oh, well, that's the path. And so we send the author down on that path and nothing happens for them. So we're looking for the right kind of business partner that understands the book business is a business, and we want to sell stuff, and we got to sell stuff consistently for it to be successful. You know, a few hundred books every month steadily selling is better than going out with a bang and selling 500 books and then selling nothing the next month. So there's a discipline and a consistency to this whole publishing business that's very important.
Yeah. So thank you. That was very well described. So along those same lines, are there three things that set writers apart from the pack, you know? So when you get, let's say you get proposals in and, you know, you've got three there and the book ideas are pretty similar and the writing's pretty, you know, all pretty similar, pretty good. What would set those, you know, one writer apart from the others?
You know, one of the things that sets writers apart, I think, is the way they come across, you know, when you talk to them on the phone, are they engaging? Do they interrupt all the time? Do they ramble around when you talk to them? Are they focused? There's a lot of that you can pick up on and tell. Are they going to be a good interview for some magazine editor to interview them, some radio station to interview them? Are they going to keep on track? Are they going to be able to tell stories? There's a lot of those kinds of clues that we're picking up from people. Some of it we pick up when we meet them in person, when we talk to them on the phone. Some of it we pick up from their proposal as far as how engaging and really delightful they are to work with. You know, my wife always says to me that you only get one chance to make a good first impression.
Right.
And many writers forget that. You know, they send me something and they say, oh, I've fixed something in this. Can I send it to you again? And I'm like, well, yeah, Dan, you didn't really make a good impression there with what you're doing. And I don't tell them that, but I'm certainly thinking about that. And, you know, David Hancock, the founder of Morgan James, and I have talked quite a bit about this. And he says, yeah, Terry says, he says, don't send me any more knuckleheads. We don't need any more knuckleheads at Morgan James. We've got plenty of them already in the authors that we published that are, they're high maintenance. They're calling about this or that all the time. And we don't need any more of those people. So you have to kind of understand that publishing is a business, and how do you come across, and do you come across well? And those are the people that we're looking for. All of us are looking for, really.
Right. And I think that speaks to the, you know, to being willing, what you mentioned before, being willing to do the promotion, being teachable, coachable, all those things. So that, because you don't want somebody who, like you said, is calling every 10 seconds to ask how to do something. You want somebody who's going to, you're going to be able to tell them this is what you need to do. And they go and they do it. They figure it out. Right.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, not to be, wondering all the time, did my book sell last month? You know, are there any numbers here to report to me? Now, we do monthly royalty reports, but another thing people don't understand about the book business is it takes time, you know, to get the money in from Amazon or from the bookstores or whoever. They have 60, 90 days, 120 days to pay their bills. And they're going to take that time. And so right. You can't just figure, okay, I did this, it must have sold books, you know? And right. So you become a nuisance if you as all the time about that kind of thing.
Right. So you mentioned that Morgan James takes novels as well. So here's a question that I don't get to ask very often. I have some pretty strong opinions about it, and I've heard some answers, so I'm curious what yours will be. Do you require a proposal from novelists, and how similar is it to a nonfiction proposal, or dissimilar?
You know, that's a great question. I'm actually speaking on Monday night at the American Christian Fiction Writers local group here in Denver about proposals. And so I believe that fiction authors can profit from writing a proposal, because like you were saying before, it's like a plan of what you're going to do, who's your competition out there, why you of all the people in the world should we publish. So yeah, I think novelists, more and more novelists are going to be required to write a proposal, but fiction more than nonfiction is really based on the story, and is this a good story? It's kind of funny to me, Nina. A number of my colleagues, I won't tell you who, at Morgan James, they don't even read fiction. So I read fiction. I spent 3 years as a fiction acquisitions editor at Howard Books, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster. So I've read a lot of fiction over the years. And I can read a few pages and see if it's going to hang together and really be a story that interests me or not. The other thing in Morgan James is we have a word count limit on our of 100,000 words. Now, most authors, when I talk to them, I ask them how long their book is, and they'll say, oh, it's about 300 pages. And that doesn't really help me, because right. I want to know what the word count is. And I don't want them to write 125,000 words. I want them to write 100,000 words or less. And that's important, because it matters how big a book that we produce, where it fits in the bookstore, how it fits on the shelf, how it packs. There's a lot of those kind of little production issues that authors never think about.
Right, right. So yeah, so that's my contention is, you know, I agree with you. I think that, well, first of all, I've been at enough conferences where I've heard literary agents say, we get so many query letters, you know, for the same book. It's the same idea over and over again. I've heard it so many times before. Too many Harry Potters, too many mermaids, too many whatever. Just, you know, give us something new. And I think that's an aspect of not doing the business side of it, not doing a competitive analysis. The novelists don't want to do that. They just think they have a good idea and they want to write it. And so I really think that it's helpful to them in terms of crafting something marketable. But I also often wonder whether, or I have to assume, I guess, that if you were to get a proposal from two novelists and they're both equally as good writers and they both have equally as good ideas, and one has written a really phenomenal proposal that says they have a platform and says that they have a marketing plan and shows the competitive analysis and their market and all those things, that you would be likely to take that writer over the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that's happening in the fiction market these days, Nina, is that people realize that they have to hire an outside editor, they have to hire somebody on their own dime before they send it off to an agent or an editor to bring that writing up to another level, because people are going to read, those of us that have been in this business a long time, we can read a few pages and make a decision whether the writing's any good or not. And so you want people to just be excited about your work. And one of the ways you can help yourself to build that excitement is to hire that outside editor and find a good one, you know, find one that people love and that, you know, have them do a few sample pages to see what they're going to do to your work. They'll do that for free, you know, before you hire them, and ask for some referrals from people. Don't just hire the first one that you come across, you know, kind of. There's some really talented freelance editors out there that can take people's marginal writing and turn it into amazing kinds of things. And so if you do that work, I know it costs, and I understand it takes effort and time to do that, but it's going to give you the best possible reception from an agent or an editor that's out there. You know, I've read this in the publishing literature that they say that at any given point in time, there's probably over a million ideas that are out there in circulation and in agents' email box and in publishers' box, covering over the transom. To be an acquisitions editor, I tell people it's kind of like trying to drink water out of a fire hose. I mean, it's amazing the information that comes to us every day. And I'm trying to be faithful with it and look for good things. What I tell you and every listener that you have here is that I've been in some of the top literary agencies in New York City. I've sat with these agents, and they're all looking every day. We're all looking for what's the next best-selling thing? Where's the next Harry Potter? Where's the next Prayer of Jabez, Left Behind? Where's the next book like that? We're all looking for those books. That's what gets us up in the morning and reading our stuff to see what's out there. So it's not like nobody's looking for your material and everything's coming back. No, thank you. Thanks, but no thanks. You know, people get rejected all over the place. I don't know if you saw this story. It was a few weeks ago in the CBS morning program. It's about the unlikely writer. There was this guy that they told about that was a cartoonist in college, and he thought he was going to be a cartoonist. And so when he got out of college, he applied all over the place for cartoonist jobs, got rejected, just couldn't find a position. And so he worked in animation is what he did in the meantime, just to pay the bills. But on the side, he was working on this book. It was a 1,300-page manuscript that he had these little drawings in it, and he was at a comic book convention, and brought a few pages as a sample of the work that he was doing, and he showed it to an editor at Abrams, and he looked at those pages and he said, "Oh," he said, "you've got a book for kids. You're doing a book for kids." Now, this author had never thought about doing a book for kids, but that's what he was doing. And so they took the pages from this author, published his book, and talking about now, his name is Jeff Kinney, and he sold 150 million copies of Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Wow. That's amazing.
So, you know, middle school kids, you know, if you're a certain age kid, you love these books. Kids talk about how they read these books over and over and over. They identify with the little cartoon characters that are in there. And it's amazing. But Jeff Kinney didn't even know he was writing a kid's book. He thought he was writing for adults. So somebody has to help you as the author to know who your audience is. It might be an editor, it might be a friend, it might be some critique group you're in, some other writing professional, but somebody has to look at your stuff and figure out where it goes out there in the marketplace. And once you find that open door, march through it is what I
do. Right. For sure. That's great advice. And so you mentioned about the novelists getting editors. Do the nonfiction authors also need to get an editor before they submit?
They do. They do. Or at least, you know, have a friend do it, or be in a critique group, or be some way to sort of pre-process your material so that the first look at your material is done by somebody else other than that editor or that agent. I mean, I get material all the time. It's in the wrong font. It's not laid out right. You know, these authors are, they're lost out there, a lot of them, and legitimately so. They have no idea what the editor expects or anything. But if you turn in your material that's, you know, in a serif font, Georgia, New Times Roman, it's in a standard kind of format, double spaced, not in bold print, and not in old English, not handwritten. I mean, I've seen all kinds of weird stuff over the years that people do. So, you know, get your stuff in a professional kind of shape, show it to the person, and find the right door. I mean, in my Jumpstart for Publishing Dreams book, Mark Victor Hansen wrote the foreword for that book, and he told a story about the Chicken Soup for the Soul books that many people have forgotten. I mean, those guys were rejected 140 times.
Right.
And, I mean, that's a lot of rejection, 140 times. Most writers send their stuff out 5, 6, 10 times, and they go, well, I guess nobody wanted this. Well, no, that's not right. As an author, whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction or children's books or whatever you're doing, you're trying to be in the place with the right stuff, talking to the right person at the right time. And a lot of those rights have to line up for you to do that. I champion people's books all day long because I really want people to get out there in the best way. And I think there's some prestige to being published by a New York publishing house, which is why I work for a New York publisher.
Right. And last question on editing. And we're about done anyway. Do you suggest that authors get their, or aspiring authors get their book proposals edited?
Absolutely. You know, get somebody to pore over that proposal. You know, in the whole proofreading process, I've heard this, and it has to do with the writing process too, is people say the hardest thing to see is something that's not there. That's not on the page. And so in your proposal, if you don't have a checklist or something to show you what the different parts are, you may be missing a whole section and nobody's told you about that.
Right.
So somebody should pre-process your material so that when the agent or the editor looks at it, they go, oh my goodness, we're excited about this.
Right.
You know, you want them to generate that excitement from your material.
Right. Now you have a resource for book proposals, correct? A course?
I do. I have an online course that I've developed. It's a membership course. It's I think it's 30 $27 a month for 3 months is what it is. 15 lessons. It comes every week. It's step by step to help you know really how to position your proposal in the best possible way for that reception. It's self-guided. Some people that have taken my course send me the lessons at first, and I go, no, I'm not gonna review your lessons for you for this. But at the end of the course, people end up with a whole huge notebook full of information from me about how to put together a proposal in the best possible way.
Together a proposal in the best possible way.
We are, yeah, and I also have
that's
a
great. And we're going to give them a link for that
teleseminar,
right?
That anybody
we
can
are,
take.
And I also have
it's
a,
ask about proposals.
Teleseminar that anybody
and
can
they
take.
Do have to give me their email address and their name in order to get that, but it's on replay, so they can download the whole hour. Right away, and they can listen to that. I'm answering authors' questions.
So
it's another great resource.
They can download the whole hour right away, and they can listen to that.
I will. I've got a handout. I've got a book proposal checklist is what I've got. It's a couple pages of information about what goes into a proposal.
And you're going to have a handout for us
as well, what are the expectations that an editor has, and gives you just basically a checklist of something that you can go through and say, yeah, okay, I've got that piece. I need to work on developing that piece or whatever to put together the best possible
information about what goes into a proposal, what are the expectations that an editor has, and gives you just basically a checklist of something that you can go through and say, yeah, okay, I've got that piece. I need to work on developing that piece or whatever to put together the best possible proposal.
Super. And we'll... everybody watching, we'll make sure that the link to the
you know the normal place
program
that I encourage authors to start
as well,
is many
so
many authors want to write a book, and books
Terry's
are
program.
Long, is what I would say after writing lots
so,
of them over the years.
Before we end,
instead,
I have two
them
last
to
questions.
Begin in the magazine world.
One
like you
is
started this
kind of general. Just any
magazine
last
articles
tips
are short.
Or bits of advice that
you're
you want
reach
to offer
many more people with your magazine article than you ever will with your book. I was associate
you know,
editor about 20 years ago at Decision Magazine. Back then, is
many,
the organ for the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. We were doing 1.8 million copies of the magazine every
lots
month.
Lots of them over the years.
And, you know, it's very common in magazines
instead,
to get to reach, you know, 150,000 people with your magazine article.
Like you and I started this
1,200, 1,500 words. It's easier to write.
Magazine articles
and
are short.
You learn a lot in the magazine craft. You learn how to have a story with a beginning, middle, and the end. You know, you learn how to write to a target audience. You learn how to write to a word count. If the editor comes back and says, oh, I didn't really want 1,500 words,
then,
I only want 500 words. Then you have to figure out how to cut
the
and give them what they want. There's a whole learning process that you gain from that experience. And so I always encourage authors to do that. And those of us that are in publishing, when we look at your proposal, when we look at your material or bio about
you,
we're looking for experience to see if you have publishing experience, and this is the kind of information that you can give us, and it's great to do. I'm still writing for magazines.
And you learn a lot in the magazine craft. You learn how to have a story with a beginning, middle, and end. You know, you learn how to write to a target audience. You learn how to write to a word count. The editor comes back and says, "Nope, I didn't really want 1,500 words. I only want 500 words." Then you have to figure out how to cut and give them what they want. There's a whole learning process that you you gain from sure. that experience. I've had authors, so I've had authors do that. Authors to do
write
that.
For different magazines, and they those of us they pull it all together, and those chapters were articles.
Or when we look Absolutely. At your material or bio about you, we're looking for experience to see if you have publishing experience, and this Absolutely. Is the kind of information Absolutely. That you can give us. And, it's,
and we call those blooks.
It's great to do. I'm still writing for magazines.
I still do too when I can. And that's a great platform building element. If you write for publications, especially those in your target market. And
they can?
You
Absolutely.
Know,
we,
when I was in,
you know, my,
when I went
my
to,
pretty simple.
To college
just,
and got
Terry
my degree in magazine journalism, one of my professors said to us,
and so they could
he
email
said,
me
if
there.
You can write
or,
a magazine you article,
me
you can
on
write
Twitter,
a book.
My,
because
my regular personal email is in my Twitter
if
profile,
you,
which is Terry
said,
at terrywhalen.com.
A nonfiction book is just a bunch
call
of,
me one of the most accessible
articles
people in
all on the same topic together.
I answer my phone,
my
email.
Yeah,
I really, I'm geared to try to help authors to succeed, no matter what you're writing or what you want to do. I've blogged and I have some great information for you to help you.
And that's the same concept between behind blogging a book that you're
I do
blogging a
series
that becomes your book.
So there's a lot of information in that blog.
Because it's one blog post after another, all on the same topic.
WS. So, is my
and
my
again,
website
you're building
it rolls
platform
to a,
at
to
the
a
same
blogspot
time, so
website
great but, ideas
you can get to it from
that's right.
writinglife
well, that's exactly WS. Right
that'll be on the handout as
so
well.
how can our viewers and listeners find out more about Morgan James or I don't know that you want them contacting you directly but you know,
I appreciate the opportunity here, Nina.
Okay.
It's great.
You know, my email is pretty simple. It's just Terry at MorganJamesPublishing.com. And so they could email me there, or they can start following me on Twitter. My regular
no, I just know that it's really
profile,
easy for writers to get discouraged and to feel like they're not doing what they should be doing. And so I just want to encourage everybody listening to this that you know keep looking for that right connection for you. It truly is out there. Too many people give up too early is what I find.
To succeed, no matter what you're writing or what you want to do, I've blogged and I have some great info for you to help you.
All right, why don't you tell them about your blog? Because you have a blog, correct?
I do. I actually have 1,200 entries in my blog. So
that's right. Absolutely. That's true.
In that blog. It's the writinglife.ws is my website. It rolls to a blogspot website, but
well, and I hope they will contact me.
It's
amazing to me, Nina, to go to a conference like you and I were at San Francisco with probably 400 people.
Yeah, definitely follow Terry on Twitter.
Over and over, I look at writers in the eye and I say, you know, that's a great idea. Write that
out all the time and share. So
what I've learned over the years is probably maybe 5% that actually follows through and sends me their material afterwards.
And great.
People look at all the stuff I've published over the years and they wonder how in the world I did that.
Handout,
I'm kind of a simple guy. You know, if an editor
Terry's
says,
checklist,
Terry, that's a great
the
idea.
Write
that up
on
and
how
send it to
me.
I make a note,
get more information
I go home, I write it up,
on the Write a Book Proposal program. And
so if you do it,
I think we pretty much covered it. Is there anything else
you
want to add to
everybody else that didn't do it is the way
no,
I look at it.
I just know that it's really easy for writers to get discouraged.
That's
and
right.
To
Absolutely.
Feel like they're not doing what they should be doing. And so I just want to encourage
it does. It's amazing.
Everybody listening to this that you know,
thank you, Nina.
Looking for that right connection for you. It truly is out there. Too many people give up too early is what I find.
Okay, I agree. I think one of the major, the